Good evening and welcome to part two of a KBIA Thinking Out Loud special, Title IX at Missouri. Tonight we host a roundtable discussion of Title IX and how gender equity is implemented at the university, in the classroom, in athletics, and in every other part of campus life. Our special guests from MU discuss how recent events at the school have brought about changes in the implementation of Title IX, about how Title IX has evolved since it became a part of U.S. Education Code in 1972, and what the future holds for gender equity at MU and throughout higher ed. Title IX at Mizzou, a special report, part two is next. Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. Good evening and welcome to a special Thinking Out Loud on KBIA, Title IX at Missouri, Part 2. I'm Darren Helwedge. Tonight we're going to continue the conversation from last week's program about Title IX here at the University of Missouri and throughout the world of higher education. By the way, if you weren't able to hear, you can check it out when you like at our website. Go to kbia.org, click on programs, and you'll find Thinking Out Loud, and you can hear part one and part two of tonight's conversation. Our guests this evening, briefly before we get started again, are the Title IX coordinator for the University of Missouri, Linda Bennett, Salama Gallimore, who is the Title IX investigator here at MU, and Senior Associate Director of Athletics for Mizzou, Sarah Reisman. Now part two, Title IX at Mizzou on KBIA. Linda, when we were talking about equality versus equity, I heard you kind of talk a little bit more about that, because I think that's a real important point to make.
I appreciate it coming from athletics. I'm a social studies educator, and citizenship education and social justice are part of who I am. We're all three women. I don't happen to be the lawyer, but I have the passion.
Me neither.
I have the passion. The other point that struck me as I listened to that conversation, so if we look at the Office of Civil Rights, it's not just women and men. It's religion, it's beliefs, it's sexual orientation, it's other aspects of mm-hmm. who we are as human beings, and that our campus should empower students to be able to express themselves in an open dialogue, in difficult dialogues along all of these lines. And so that's why I was pointing it out. It's not just about Title IX. It's about providing higher education to all the people who come to our campus, and I'm very passionate about that.
Salama, let's pick on one of the attorneys for a second here. Talk about what makes this issue difficult, because there is obviously a baseline of some understanding of Title IX, but there's still a whole lot of people that really don't get the full scope of what it means for a university or a school.
Sure, and I think one of the, you mentioned with ADA that it was reasonable, accommodations right. that are reasonable. For Title IX, our standard is that if the institution has actual notice that sex discrimination okay. is occurring, we have the obligation to not be deliberately indifferent. And so this kind of deliberately indifferent standard is what students will oftentimes sue under, that they were not protected under Title IX because the institution did know or had reason to know that they were being discriminated against on the basis of their sex and did nothing about it. So our office is there to stop the discrimination that's occurring, that we find out about, investigate it, prevent its reoccurrence, and then remedy the effects. And remedy could be if we get a whole bunch of complaints from a certain even off-campus apartment complex, maybe it's calling our off-campus programming department and letting them know, hey, a lot of people who live here are saying it's not safe and they don't get notice if there is an assault in this complex. Maybe we stop referring people there. Or it could be, we get a complaint from another institution, that one of our students is not being treated fairly there when they're at an internship program. So it could be communicating with another institution as well. So it's not just on campus. It kind of encompasses a lot of different areas. And it's equity in that we want people to know that no matter what type of discrimination they're experiencing mm-hmm. or where they're experiencing it, if they're a student here, we want to know that we will follow up with them and make sure that it doesn't recur if we can.
We've all talked about
awareness about education and about the things that are happening, are you still finding that there are situations where people are having their rights violated and they just don't know that it's what's happening to them is wrong? They just don't know that there's a mechanism in place to get it fixed or addressed?
Sure. And I think a lot of that comes from, I feel like the non-consensual sex or non-consensual sexual contact and sexual harassment are major components that everybody kind of realizes fall under Title IX. But there's also stalking on the basis of sex. There's sexual exploitation. There's dating and intimate partner violence. And I think some of those, when students are experiencing, say, stalking, they don't realize it until it becomes extremely, extremely destructive and invasive and kind of destroying their life on campus, that it's something that they should address and that there's an office there for them to do so.
With the understanding that all four of us at this table are employed by the University of Missouri and we're putting this primarily in a Mizzou focus, talk a little bit about how Title IX is enforced at public schools at K-12.
They do actually have the same requirements that if they do know of sexual discrimination occurring, that they must act on it. They cannot be deliberately indifferent to any of that. In terms of resources, I feel like as a university, we're luckier because we do have more resources. There are students on campus, so there's a lot of different centers that are available. You know, we have an LGBTQ center, which I know a lot of high schools may not have, a women's center, the RSVP center that we mentioned as well, and the counseling center, student mental health services. There's a lot of places to go at the university that I know at public schools there's not necessarily those avenues, but they are addressing it in their own way.
Well, one group we haven't mentioned that I want to be sure that you bring into the conversation, there are confidential places for individuals to go. And so we mentioned RSVP. So when we talk about mandatory reporters of employees, an individual could go to RSVP and receive support and counseling in a private, confidential setting, as well as student health or the counseling center. So individuals can get support where they want to keep their privacy intact and confidential.
Title IX became law in 1972. Talk about some ways in which there's been progress made in recent years, because this they celebrated the 40th anniversary just a year or two ago, and it's obviously still a work in progress. It's obviously still something that we in higher education are not saying we've done it, but we're working towards it.
I'm going to defer to my lawyer colleagues.
Okay, yeah, please. feel free, both of you, to talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think that in 1996, that was a court case that established that students could be free of or should be free of sexual harassment at universities and other institutions receiving public funding. So that kind of put the sexual harassment piece into Title IX and kind of that's, I guess, where Sarah kind of when she was referencing the athletics, that's sort of a departing point there. There's a Supreme Court case in 1999, and that was the deliberate indifference standard that I was referring to established that. And then in 2005, there was another Supreme Court case that established that you had the right to be free from retaliation if you were involved in any sort of Title IX investigation, whether you were a witness, a reporter. You should not feel any adverse consequences or effects from your reporting and your involvement in a protected activity.
And then within the world of athletics, I mean, there's obviously been, since the law went into effect, some very major changes in how things have been accomplished within Title IX.
Certainly. I think the first probably 10 to 12 years of Title IX being in existence was very much a roller coaster as far as enforcement was concerned. And that's speaking just more from the athletic standpoint. It was enacted in 1972, and there was a lot of immediate I guess, action taken with regard to adding opportunities. But then as people begin to talk about it more and there begin to be some court cases, I think some schools actually pulled back a little bit. And when the Supreme Court in 1984 determined that the effect of Title IX didn't go down below maybe the surface of the institution receiving federal funds, that the subgroups weren't necessarily included, that was an opportunity for a lot of schools to say, hey, it doesn't apply to athletics. And so they actually dropped programs or dropped resources for that. Congress immediately, well, as immediately as Congress can, turned around and said no. And in the Civil Rights Restoration Act, about 3 years later, said no, we absolutely intended this to reach to every level of a university, including athletics departments. And so I think by that time, there were no more excuses. And, well, you hope there were.
Sure.
There were no more excuses under the law to not comply and not offer those opportunities and those resources. So University of Missouri had its first intercollegiate women's programs in 1974 with the one addition, one subtraction, basically, over the years. We've maintained those programs since that time.
Those same nine
exactly.
teams. Which one, remind me, got dropped?
So I know field hockey. Field hockey after about 5 or 6 years, and then soccer, of course, soccer got added in 1996.
Added. Okay.
Right.
Okay. And Brian's been the only coach ever since
then.
That is true. Let's talk a little bit more about just the sports thing and how things have changed. I mean, it's been really remarkable. I'm in the middle of a project doing some reading up on some of the early days of women's basketball here at Mizzou and some of the early times when Coach Rutherford was here. And it's really very remarkable. I mean, you talked about how some of these things have changed. There were the teams, there were the scholarships, but stuff's just changed so dramatically. I saw very nearly 9,000 people at a volleyball match over at Hearn Center last year. Gymnastics draws several thousand every time out. The softball team sells out a lot of games. And just talk about how women's sports has grown at the university in your time here.
Well, I think that the respect given to those programs has grown over time, and that respect feeds on itself. When we internally as an institution and as a department have provided them with the resources and the again, that respect over the years, it's just allowed them to grow to the point, again, where there's really not a question of male versus female as far as resources are concerned. It's what does this program need to be highly successful? And to the extent that we can, we want to provide those resources.
I'd be interested in getting your response to this as well, but one of the big questions, obviously, in intercollegiate athletics right now is the issue of paying players, and there are going to be some who want to just make it completely cutthroat free market. The football players bring in the revenue, supposedly, mm-hmm. so they get paid a whole bunch. Why should we worry about that? How much does Title IX play into the conversation about this and the idea of equity when we're talking about the possibility of increasing scholarship funding or paying players, theoretically?
Oh, it absolutely plays into it to a high extent, because just because there might be a court ruling that says you need to do this or you need to do that, that doesn't negate what Title IX requires us to do. But I think more importantly here on our campus is going back to that expectation of all of our programs that we're going to be successful and we're going to be fair. And so we would not be in favor of anything that favored in extra benefits for only our male student athletes or only ones that are in the higher revenue producing sports to have those advantages and those opportunities. And, you know, as an institution, I think I can say that while cost of attendance and increasing the scholarship opportunities for all of our student-athletes is something that we're in favor of, when you start to talk about paying student-athletes mm-hmm. as employees, not only is that not something we see as appropriate with collegiate athletics, you also get into all sorts of employment law issues and things that really aren't being discussed that are very complicated and would change things to an extent that I don't think people are really recognizing.
So I'll follow up with you just kind of on the same question and the idea of how Title IX would affect some of these conversations.
I think that Sarah brought up a good point with employment law. That's like a very complex issue to bring to forefront paying student athletes. I mean, I guess most of my commentary here will be opinions. So
fire away, man. That's all right.
I'm gonna go ahead and defer to Sarah's comment and say that it pretty much summarizes anything that I would say.
Okay.
As well.
All right. Well, that's all right.
Darren, if I might just maybe add to that, I think that's where it comes back to remembering that this is an educational institution, right. And intercollegiate athletics are part of the educational experience. We are not a corporation or a professional sports franchise where those who are bringing in the most money receive the most money mm-hmm. or receive the most resources. Again, whether it's an academic division or whether it's a team in intercollegiate athletics, we want to be appropriately supportive of those. And I think people lose sight of that because there is so much commercialization and you do see so much revenue coming in a lot of ways with intercollegiate athletics that people lose sight of the fact that this is not a business.
it's easy to forget what you just brought up within the world of athletics. And when we're talking about Title IX, when we're talking about scholarships, when we're talking about all of these issues, it is really about the opportunity to go to college and get an education.
Right. And that's what Mike Alden and others in athletics we discussed. They're students first. Mm-hmm. And so they're here to be students, and that's why they come to higher education. And we want to support that so that they can be successful in receiving an education. And then second, if a undergraduate or graduate student has their hat on as an employee, then that changes their role in Title IX. They would have requirements to be reporters if they were employees at that time. And that is not a situation we would want to have our athletes put in.
And all of us as people who work at a university see situations, and Sarah, maybe you can talk a little bit about this, because I know you're seeing this with some of these the athletic scholarships. This is providing an opportunity to go to college, sometimes for people that probably would have anyway, but frequently for people who wouldn't have probably never even looked at the inside of a university classroom without this opportunity that an athletic scholarship might provide for them.
No, I think you're absolutely right. There are opportunities here that might not otherwise be available. I think some of the other things that get missed are the other support resources that are provided to student-athletes, medical care, academic support, training, coaching. You know, there are a lot of pieces to that puzzle. The Men for Men and Women for Women program that I keep bringing up, but I keep bringing them up because they are so important. And with Coach Ivy's leadership and Kim Lambert's leadership, those kinds of things, I don't know how some of those things you can put a dollar value on. Some of them you can't. But those resources are very beneficial, and they would come at a price for someone out on the open market, I guess, so to speak, to utilize.
Does it get frustrating for you that we do get so much attention to the difficulties, to the people getting arrested and the situations that arise, and maybe not as much to some of the things that we're talking about and some of the things that the university is being proactive on?
Arrested for a range of things? Or
yeah,
arrested for
just
sexual
in general,
assault?
Yeah. Do we focus too much on the negative stuff?
Who's we? The media?
I'll wear that collar for a moment and represent that group of people. Do we in the media maybe focus too much, whether we're talking about sports or just the university in general, on the negative situations, people getting arrested, sexual assault, and so forth, and not enough on what's being done to prevent or address?
Title IX, because it has come up in the news a lot, what I guess I struggle with the most related to that is we have new policies here on campus, and understanding those policies and how they function across the campus, and the media not necessarily having a good handle on the terminology and how that process has changed can be frustrating, and how we help individuals on campus plus the media be able to have those conversations.
Comment about this.
Please.
As well. We appreciate, you know, that the media is recognizing this as a issue that is affecting students and that the university is addressing in many ways. But the reporting regarding Cleary releases sometimes is not as helpful as I think maybe sensational. A lot of times I work very hard to let a student know in the kindest and most understanding way possible that an event may be Cleary'd, and they will say, okay, I want other people to know that. I want to prevent that. But then if that clear release is reported on multiple times, that kind of destroys the relationship that the student may have with our office, the trust level between us and the student, just because it's a little bit more publicity mm-hmm. than they would want about the incident. They wanted the timely warning, not necessarily the subsequent reporting.
It's a tough situation, and
sure.
It's a tough situation for journalists, because there's a point at which obviously situations developing and being ignored isn't helping anybody. But as you said, if stuff gets sensationalized, that can be a concern as well.
Sure. So can I take
Please.
Up on that?
Yeah.
So in just for clarification, since we were talking about clarification, so an individual, something could occur on a Thursday. And if MUPD or Columbia Police are not involved in, or that person or someone reports it to them, then our office may not be notified for days or weeks or even months later. Then the Cleary comes out if we deem it safety for the campus. So an incident doesn't mean that there's a report in a timely fashion by individuals. And sometimes that causes people discomfort when they see it in the news.
That's got to be a difficult decision when you're at MUPD or another place on campus and deciding at what point this gets taken to the next level.
Well, as soon as it's reported, we are working together to do a Clery release. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't necessarily get reported when it occurs.
I see.
If the incident fits the criteria of something needed to be clear. A lot of times it's not a continuing threat if the assailant has been arrested or identified.
Right.
So,
Linda Bennett, Salama Gallimore, Sarah Reese been our guests. Let's move into the final big issue here, the goals of Title IX in education. How close do you feel we are to achieving those ultimate goals, and what needs to happen to get closer? And I guess we started the whole thing with you, Linda. Let's start this one with you. How close to achieving goals? What needs to happen next?
There are goals related to Title IX, the Clery Act, the Violence Against Women Act. So there are a number of federal laws and things that happen at the federal level that we are working towards and dealing with on this campus and other campuses. Laws change. Laws get amended. I mean, as we talk from the 70s through this current time, you know, so we're always working towards achieving compliance in those areas on this campus. And so we keep up with that. We keep abreast of it, and we try to change our policies and our practices to best meet the law at the time.
What's the best way to stay on top of that to make sure that, as you say, you're staying on top of the best practices?
We work very closely with counsel. There is a particular counsel, general counsel at the UM system.
Mm-hmm.
So one person who helps us quite a bit is in that office and helps us keep up with it, as well as we have lawyers as a part of our team to stay abreast of it.
Which I guess makes it appropriate to turn to you next to just kind of ask you the same question. How close do you feel that we are to achieving the ultimate goal of Title IX, and what else needs to happen to get closer?
Sure. I think that in my role, seeing reporting and me being able to meet with students and explain to them their rights under Title IX, that kind of can create a ripple effect. If one student is treated well by our office, it receives accommodations, or mm-hmm. has a positive, view of the disciplinary process that we've set forward, that kind of shows that the university is addressing these complaints and reports, taking them seriously, and that the process is fair, that it is considerate of complainants that may want to come forward but want to be protected a little bit during the process. I think that we play a lot of defense, and prevention is really the key, getting out in front of the problem. So while I do love my job, I would love to see less reporting. And I think that comes from really knowing what Title IX is, and, you know, talking about things that are a little bit uncomfortable, like consent, you know, mm-hmm. talking about incapacitation, letting people know that these behaviors could be, you know, considered crimes, if not just university policy violations.
I've got grown kids, and so I'm aware that this is stuff that young people do see maybe a little bit more comfortable talking about than we might have 30 years ago when I was in college.
Sure. And I think that's very true.
And then let me just, Sarah, have you comment on the same thing. How close are we within the world of athletics to achieving the ultimate goals of Title IX, and what else needs to happen?
Well, on the issue of sexual assault and sexual harassment, first of all, the athletics department feels very fortunate to be able to be a resource and support for the Title IX office and have appropriate involvement there. From an internal standpoint, I think we've also recognized that, you know, for all the positives about attention that we want and that we get from media and otherwise, we have to acknowledge that there's a flip side to that, too. So when things happen that aren't positive, we need to address those. And so from an internal standpoint, we've actually developed a sexual assault communications team that involves somebody from the Boone County Prosecutor's Office and, you know, other people on campus, assistant dean from the law school, Danica Wolf is part of that. And so really trying to help us make sure that from an internal standpoint, our communication and education is at a level that it should be, again, to then support the Title IX office. When you look at athletics, I think it's just a constant monitoring situation and making sure that as new whether it's new technology. I mean, we're talking about everything from heart monitors to new equipment in the strength and conditioning area to provision of iPads, you know, just all those different kinds of things, and the SEC network, and you know, how there's distribution of our various sports there as well as in the rest of the media. There are just constant things that we have to be aware of and making sure that our programs are being treated fairly and equitably.
You said something about the future. So two examples I'd like to share is over the next months and years, we will be looking at how we're doing. So this isn't a stagnant point in time. So there will be a climate survey that'll occur. So the members of our campus community and beyond will be able to give us feedback on where we are and where we need to go. Okay. And the other thing that we're working towards is it's not about just an instance. It's about trends and patterns, and so that we can better serve our students when situations, places, individuals are not following the policies related to Title IX. Then we can work on those trends or patterns to improve what we're doing.
It's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA, a special program on gender equity in higher education, Title IX at Mizzou. And we want to thank our guests, Linda Bennett, the interim Title IX coordinator for the University of Missouri, Salama Gallimore, the university's Title IX investigator, and Associate Athletic Director Sarah Reisman. Thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you.
Let's take a moment and thank some of the other people who've helped put this together. Our videographers, Travis McMillan and Lowell Thomas, audio production from Pat Akers with post-production by Sam Richmond. We want to thank Ryan Levy, who has been instrumental in shepherding this project from the very beginning. We acknowledge the assistance of the MU News Bureau, particularly Christian Basie, who was very helpful in getting all of our guests and getting the whole thing put together. The staff of the MU Athletic Strategic Communications Team, especially Jenny Dewar, who gave good advice and encouragement. And as always with KBIA Sports, I'd like to acknowledge the assistance of Karen Mitchell of the Missouri School of Journalism. Remember to join Thinking Out Loud in December. We'll have another special program. We will sit down and visit with the first family of Mizzou, the doctors, R. Bowen and Karen Lofton, and you can follow Thinking Out Loud on Twitter and Facebook. The director of KBIA is Dr. Mike Dunn. Our program director is Kyle Felling. I'm Darren Helwedge. Thanks for joining us. All right, and we thank you again for joining us this evening for part two of our Title IX at Mizzou special. Remember, you can hear tonight's program again, and if you missed part one, listen to it. Just go to our website, kbia.org. Click on Programs for Thinking Out Loud. And be sure to tune in again next week for Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Nathan Anderson is going to be our guest from the University Concert Series as he talks about the second half of the concert series season, some great holiday programs, and then a lot happening after the new year. We'll tell you all about it next week on the program. Also, another segment in Farm Your Yard with Carrie Hargrove from the Columbia Center for Urban Agriculture. She'll talk about getting your yard and your garden down to bed for the winter. That's ahead next Tuesday evening on Thinking Out Loud. Remember, you can follow Thinking Out Loud on Facebook and on Twitter. It's KBIA Thinking. Till next Tuesday evening, for our executive producer, Trevor Harris, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.